This is Dom Bettinelli, the CEO of SQPN, with a brief but very important message. For more than a decade, SQPN has produced the Catholic faith and pop culture podcasts that you love. We're a nonprofit organization, so it's only your generosity that lets us carry out our mission. We haven't run a fundraiser in 2 years, and that's why we need to ask for your help right now. Please make a pledge of whatever amount you can afford to help us continue providing your favorite podcasts, as well as exciting new ones we have planned. To make your pledge and find out about the free thank you gifts we'd like to send you, visit sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. Thank you for your generosity. May we hear from you today?
You're listening to Let's Talk Episode 23, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Howdy, y'all. Father Corey here once again for Let's Talk, our weekly SQPN community podcast. Glad you could join us. This is a kind of a busy week we've got going coming up here, especially in the Catholic Church. But we've got a couple of people who want to talk about some of the stuff that's going on. So let's get to them. First of all, Angela Cialana is joining us again. How you doing, Angela?
Hello. I am doing well. I've survived all of the rain that we're getting in Texas. It's insane, and I feel really bad. On a serious note, there's tons of people who are really suffering from that. So, you know, prayers out to them. But yeah, I'm glad to be here with you guys and excited to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, we're glad you haven't washed away down into the Gulf of Mexico or something bad like that.
Yeah, it's rough.
And then Dom is here again. This is the month of Dom. How you doing, Dom?
I'm doing great. Wow, I have a whole month. That's awesome. Not everyone gets a whole month.
You didn't see that on the calendar. The month of October is the month of Dom.
Well, Domtober.
You know, it is Domtober, yes. Well, for multiple means, it's actually because this week coming up is the anniversary of my birth. So I'm happy to celebrate the month of Dom.
Ad multos anos. It's many years.
Yeah,
that's kind of a traditional Latin greeting for an anniversary or birthday. To many years.
In Polish, it was it stolat. I remember that from John Paul, Saint John Paul. Now, stolat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good celebration. You've got an interesting day. You know, the day that the Lutherans broke away from the church. Something else happened on that day. We'll have to talk about later.
But yes, I have a whole list actually of Halloween. Things that happened on Halloween.
It's an interesting day. And that's one of the topics we're going to talk about. But, you know, before we get to that one, actually, you know, we're going to start more with the Catholic perspective on this week. Of course, this is the week of All Saints and All Souls. And it's a, you know, again, it's a busy week. You know, All Saints is a holy day of obligation. You know, no, you got to go to Mass twice this week. Oh, terrible. On Sunday and on Thursday. I had to think there for a second. It is Thursday. I've got my nursing home Mass on Thursday, so I'm going to actually have the nursing home Mass and another Mass in the church for that. So I had to think for a second. What day is that again?
But the life of a priest.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, especially when they do throw this, you know, people think, oh, Holy Days of Obligation, it's such a difficult thing. You know, we have to get to Mass again during the week, you know, and it's like, well, think about the priest. We got to plan for that, too. You
know, right.
We got to figure out, okay, when can we schedule Masses so people can come and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the oldest traditions of the church is to celebrate the saints and the souls. And that's why it is such an important week. But there's other celebrations that have surrounded it. Of course, everybody knows Halloween, you know, All Hallows Eve. But Angela, there's another one that you're very familiar with that you see, especially in the Mexican culture, but not just in Mexico. I know other areas as well celebrate Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah. Dia de los Muertos is a Mexican, summary here before we dive deep later on. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's a Mexican holiday that is now celebrated on the Day of All Souls, November 2nd. And, you know, it's dragged, you know, in before and after. People kind of celebrate here before and after as well. But it's basically, yeah, the remembrance of our ancestors, going to visit their graves and telling their stories, praying for them. And that has old roots in the Aztecs and the Mayans. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to celebrating that with my family coming up.
Very good. What are, you know, you mentioned a couple of traditional practices of going, you know, going to the graves, and what are some of the things that people will do on that day, you know, other than, you know, that maybe isn't quite exactly about the All Souls, but there's more traditions that have kind of grown up around it as well, aren't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's definitely, you know, things surrounding, like, a lot of people have seen in media, you know, if you don't live in southwestern United States, you've probably seen like the sugar skull type of design with like a skull that's very decorated, and it's got colors and designs and everything on it. And so that is called a calavera or a calaverita. That's just the Spanish word for skull. And mind blowing, I know. And yeah, that's kind of the symbol of, you know, the Day of the Dead, but also kind of points to how, you know, life is just, you know, we live life and then we have our death, and death is kind of a doorway into another life. So that's why there's kind of this joyful, you know, celebratory, colorful stuff surrounding Dia de los Muertos. But you do have those sugar skulls. You have little skeletons that are also created, a lot of art, you know, associated with this holiday. Created to maybe you can get a skeleton that reminds you of one of your relatives. So it could be like a dancing skeleton, or it could be a laughing skeleton, or, you know, something that kind of reminds you of your ancestors. And there's also like cultural commentary that, you know, kind of comes into that also. But, you know, a lot of it does have to do with the ancestors. Right. So, you know, you do see people like, there's festivals that are celebrated in the streets. People dress up as skeletons and, alebrijes. And if you've listened to our Secrets of Coco episode of Secrets of TV and Movies, on, here on SQPN, you'll hear more about what alebrijes are, but basically, they're like, kind of fantastical animals, combining different parts of different animals together, and sort of this idea that has been sort of incorporated into Dia de los Muertos because of different cultural history going on. But yeah, I mean, there is tons of that stuff, but it's mostly ancestor related.
Sure. Well, that's, I think it's fascinating to me, of course, coming from a very European descent culture, shall we say. You know, I've lived most of my life in, you know, the northern parts of the United States, especially the West. The Feast of All Souls is really kind of a forgotten feast in a lot of the United States. Outside, again, of the Hispanic culture, the Mexican culture. And others as well. I know, like, Filipinos celebrate All Souls in similar ways. You know, like, they'll go have meals at the graves. You know, they'll go have a picnic at the cemetery at their family's graves. I mean, that's another beautiful tradition. But it's interesting to see that this feast celebrating those who have gone before us, those Christians who have died, who, you know, by God's will, hopefully are in purgatory, preparing to enter into the kingdom of heaven. You know, of course, that is what All Souls celebrates, is those souls who are in purgatory. All saints are those who have made it to heaven. All souls are those who have gone to purgatory. But it is fascinating to see almost the celebration of life that, you know, the All Souls has become with the Day of the Dead type celebration.
Could I ask, Angela, I think we talked about this when we did the Secrets of Coco, but I want to kind of ask again. Because there's a subtle distinction that All Souls Day is a Catholic feast day, holy day, but Day of the Dead is a Mexican cultural event.
Yeah.
But they're not exactly the same thing. It's not just a Mexican way of celebrating All Souls Day, right? I just want to make sure that we're getting that correct.
Yes and no. The Mayans and Aztecs have celebrated similar types of festivals throughout the year in their history. And then when the missionaries came over to Mexico from Europe, they observed this. And as, you know, we know historically, the Catholic Church has integrated a lot of cultural practices of the native peoples into, like, kind of syncretizing with Catholic, faith and Catholic devotion and so forth. So that's basically what happened, is that they said, well, you know, we have this, the commemoration of the faithful departed on November 2nd. And that was started, you know, long before, I think in the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, let's encourage people to focus these celebrations on November 2nd as part of the Catholic faith. So while it is, Dia de los Muertos is a way for Catholic Mexicans to celebrate, you know, All Souls Day, there are also non-Catholic Mexicans that still celebrate All Souls Day through their celebration of Dia de los Muertos. So they may not, you know, be celebrating All Souls Day as such, like they don't go to mass and they won't, you know, pray for their dead, but they will have the, some of the same practices of going to the graves and telling the stories and remembering them and that kind of thing.
So it's not just, to go to the other extreme, it's not really even just Mexican Halloween, so to speak.
Oh, no, it's not.
because Halloween here has lost pretty much almost all religious significance in this country or anywhere where it's really celebrated. And it's just a day to dress up and be spooky and scary and
trick-or-treat and get candy, get sick on candy and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah.
Sort of lost its connection to the
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's kind of one of the sad things that I feel, you know, seeing, I kind of tweeted this past week, like, hey, people, just to remind you, like, the actual way to celebrate Dia de los Muertos is, you know, like, 1, 2, 3, because, you know, I mean, I love that, like, Coco, the movie, is bringing the awareness of Dia de los Muertos out into, like, you know, a lot of Western culture now, more so than just the Hispanic culture. But you'll see a lot of people kind of hijacking that and making it into, like, Mexican Halloween, and that's really not what it is. So, it's sad that it is, like, losing the tie between celebrating family and the importance of your family and remembering those who've gone before you and honoring them, making it into, let's dress up like skeletons and, you know, kind of use this Mexican symbolism that is apart from what it actually points to.
See, it's that kind of surprise, I guess, doesn't surprise me, but, you know, that there's not quite the cultural appropriation. I cringe at that term a little bit because it kind of gets thrown around of, you know, if you're a white person who eat tacos, you're doing cultural appropriation. My political rant over. But there's, you know, like, people think of Cinco de Mayo, which, as I understand it, is really not that big of a deal in Mexico. But here it's a day to go get drunk on Corona and tequila.
Like St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. It's not a day to go. Well, that's actually the interesting thing is it. These things are starting to go back to the countries that we're supposedly. Yeah. So in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day, you're seeing people doing what Americans do and
the green beer and
what a horrible thing to do to beer.
But it, I know, right? Besides, if you're going to drink Irish beer, you got to drink Guinness, so the green won't help. But anyway,
exactly.
I'm kind of surprised we haven't yet seen the commercialization of this yet, almost like a second Halloween.
Oh, it's coming. You know,
I'm sure
like,
it is. As Cocoa, being as big a hit as it was, I'm sure it will
be.
Yeah.
And then as there are more Mexican immigrants coming into the United States, you'll see the dispersion of that, you know, those celebrations. And then you'll see the cultural appropriation, I think, also.
Right.
Which, you know, it's kind of sad, but it's sort of the way of the world these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to share, you know, these cultural experiences that you have that are unique to you. That's one of the reasons why I like to talk about it.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It is sad that, you know, whenever there's a big thing that everyone celebrates, all the companies go, how can we make a buck off of that? Let's sell some stuff related to that. And
exactly.
You know, kind of steal it away from people.
And nine times out of 10, unfortunately, it's how can we get people drunk again? You know, so many, at least here in the United States, so many of these celebrations, these cultural celebrations are really just, oh, what's our excuse today to drink?
You'd think people wouldn't initially have to have an excuse for that, but, you know,
they don't, but at least they can have an excuse.
Right.
Oh, you know, today sounds like a good day to have a Corona. Oh, it's, you know, Cinco de Mayo. Perfect. You know,
no day is a good day to have a Corona.
And I'm not opposed, obviously, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a Corona fan myself.
No, I'm not either. I prefer something, you know, one of the with things, actual taste.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, one of the things I really like about the Dia de los Muertos is the art, the folk art surrounding it. I think Mexican folk art is just beautiful. It's so colorful and expressive. I really love the style. And it's one of the things I liked about Coco was you saw that color and style and all of that. And even in something which can be as macabre as skeletons, there's still a beauty put into it, which is kind of, I think, surprising to some. But I really love the beautiful way of seeing that death is not it's certainly not something we want to embrace per se, but it's not something it's like you said, it's a gateway and a doorway to something to something else. And I think there's something to in that, you know, decorating skulls it to be beautiful is sort of that idea. I don't know, I'm kind of struggling to express it.
Yeah, there's this I guess, Father, you can help me out with this, but oh, death, where is your sting?
Yes.
That's something that we say in during Easter.
Yep, it comes from the actually, I think it comes from the scriptures, but most people hear it during the Easter vigil at the Exultet. Right. Oh, death, where is your victory? Oh, death, where is your sting? You know, and it's I love that phrase, just like, you know what? By Christ's death, we have life.
Yeah.
And death no longer wins.
1 Corinthians 15.
1 Corinthians.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a mockery of death in a way, too, like that death doesn't have to be scary. It's not something that is, needs to. I think a lot of people in Western culture at least live in fear of their death. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of anxiety around death-related conversation. But, this idea that obviously, we do mourn. I mean, we do mourn the loss of those that we've lost. But at the same time, that there's so much to celebrate about each person and to remember how they have affected us, you know, and that's such an integral part of our Mexican culture because of the ties to our family and how strong those are.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's something I've actually discussed it with our local mortician, funeral home director. And, he's really noticed that as people get further and further and further away from the immediacy of death, you know, as the seeing the dead person and being involved in, you know, in the funeral preparations and everything, as that's become more sterile, people are more squeamish about death, shall we say. You know, they don't understand death. They want to avoid it. They want to block it out of their lives. They don't want to see it. And it's kind of a tragedy because death is going to come for all of us someday. You know, we are going, you know, no one gets out of life alive. I think, you know, you know, we're all going to die, you know, unless, of course, our Lord comes during our lifetimes, God willing. But, you know, we are not going to get out of this. You know, we are going to die at some point. And we don't, in our Western culture, we have such a fear of death, like he's, you know, that we don't want anything to do with it. We want to try to avoid it. We want to try to postpone it indefinitely, if not permanently. And again, you know, it's not bad to have medical procedures and things like that to extend our lives and make our lives better. But at the same time, we still need to realize we will die. And I think this beautiful celebration for that is it's recognition. Death is a part of life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm. So.
Yep. So, looking forward to that. And that was a deep thought.
Yeah.
Actually, we're contemplating that.
I just want a clarification for Father Corey. So All Saints Day and All Souls Day they follow each other. And from my understanding, All Saints Day is sort of the catch-all. We have, you know, we have saints days, like feast days, like October 1st is St. Therese, and it's her feast day. We celebrate her specifically. But when we talk about saints are everybody that's in heaven, whether they're canonized or not. Yes. And so All Saints Day is celebrating all the sort of unknowns saints.
It's all the saints, every single person, whether it is the named ones, the St. Francis, the St. Patrick, the St. Therese of Lisieux, the ones that we know. Yep. And it's the little old lady that prayed five rosaries a day and was at mass every morning, even when she could barely walk, and would give you the shirt off her back and the change in her pocket, even though she was, you know, the holy people in our daily lives that have made it to eternal life.
Or thank God, the dad who barely held it together, got to mass on Sundays, was a sinner, spent 1,000 years in purgatory, but eventually made it into heaven. Yes, him exactly. too. He's my patron, and that'll probably be me, hopefully.
There's a lot of dads out there that they made it to eternal life. They made it into the kingdom of heaven. Right. And yes, it was probably partially because they didn't strangle their kids sometimes, you know, as much as they wanted to. You know?
There's the old joke about the, you know, there's always the doctor who graduated at the bottom of his class, you know, for medical school. He graduated, but he was not the top of his class. He was at the bottom. Right. So that's got to be me sneaking my way into heaven.
Yeah, I always joke. I'm aiming for heaven, but I will grab onto purgatory by my fingernails if I have to.
Exactly. So then All Souls is everybody who's in purgatory waiting to get into heaven.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. That is a key distinction because, like I said, you know, All Saints is everybody that's made it to heaven. All Souls is everybody that is suffering and preparing for heaven. So you have both of them together. Now, notice we don't have a day celebrating those who have gone the other place,
right.
You know, because obviously that's not something we're celebrating. Right. You know, our
prayers are not efficacious for them.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm. And that's the point. You know, we celebrate All Souls because we want to pray for those who have died, who have entered into purgatory, who are just awaiting their time to enter into heaven. And that's why
if you get to purgatory, you are going to heaven eventually.
You're good. You're good. Yeah. Purgatory is not the judging place. You are judged before you enter into purgatory, heaven or hell.
Yep.
So, and that's why, you know, for All Souls, and by the way, one thing I'm starting up is an old tradition in the church is to celebrate a mass at the cemetery. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been done here probably for a long time, if ever. So this year, weather permitting, of course, the tough part about doing it in Montana is on November 2nd, it could be blizzard. You know, it sounds like it's gonna be nice weather. It's supposed to be 50s and sunny, so it should be decent, but you know, that's why, you know, in the Catholic Church, there is a tradition of going to the cemeteries and celebrating mass at the cemetery, whether it is in a chapel or at a particular spot in the cemetery outdoors, for that reason, to pray for those who are there, who are in purgatory awaiting their entry into heaven. Mm. So it's, yeah. So, I mean, there is that that idea of praying for those. And for the Day of Dead, is there much of a mindset of praying for those who have died as well? I mean, again, pulling that all souls in the Day of the Dead together, that connection.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because of the, you know, those wonderful missionaries, mm-hmm. they incorporated that as well. And so, yeah, I will be definitely going to Mass 3 days or 3 days this week, yeah. For sure. at the cemetery, we'll have Mass at the cemetery where my great grandmother's buried. That's a huge part of it. I mean, here in San Antonio, Texas, you see pretty much every one of the parishes has some type of altar.
Right.
That is part of the Dia de los Muertos tradition.
Mm.
So you have like the sarape, which is like the Mexican blanket. You've got the people bring pictures of their loved ones in frames or whatever. And then there's flowers and there's candles and there's different things. And of course, then that's where you have the Book of the Dead that the parish puts for people to write the names of those loved ones that have passed away so that we can offer Mass for them. So, yeah, it's kind of like all incorporated together.
Thank you for the reminder of that, by the way. I try to do a Book of the Dead, you know, too. So that Book of Remembrance, I try to do that as well. And that, again, that is something that is a tradition within the Catholic Church is to remember in name those of our parish, those of our families who have died. And one thing it's kind of interesting is the Feast of All Souls is the one day where priests are explicitly encouraged to celebrate three masses, you know, for different intentions. Which is kind of interesting because usually priests are expected to celebrate one, maybe two and three if necessary. Like I celebrate three on Sundays because I have to. I've got three churches to celebrate at. But this is the one day where priests are encouraged to as a privilege to celebrate the three masses. So that's kind of an interesting there too, again, for those prayers for the souls. Very good. When you were a kid, did you kind of look forward to the Day of the Dead? Was that kind of like something you look forward to, or is that something that kind of you grew appreciation as you grew older?
Definitely grew appreciation for it. Honestly, back then, I don't know if I see this. Maybe this kind of is a reflection of how integrated this whole thing is with the culture in general, is that I don't know if I really remember distinctly celebrating it on a specific day every year, but that it was like the little altar that has, like I just described, people usually have those in their homes also. And I just remember that being there like constantly in my grandmother's house. So I don't remember a time when it wasn't there. And I don't remember a time, you know, when celebrating Mass and going to cemeteries and whatever, it wasn't necessarily like a thing that happened on a certain day for me as a kid. So but yeah, I mean, as I've grown older, I've definitely come to understand and appreciate the different, festivities and things. And you know, now saying, hey, when can we go to the cemetery and what time are we going to go and that type of thing. But that's interesting. No one's ever asked me that, so I've never really thought about it. But it's all a blur.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, I just reflect, of course, on my upbringing with Halloween. And of course, kids always look forward to it because you could dress up and you could get all the candy and go around and trick or treat and all that. And I didn't know if this celebration was one. Of course, thank Christmas. Everybody thinks of Christmas. You know, kids love Christmas because they get all kinds of goodies, all kinds of gifts. And I didn't know if, you know, this was something kids look forward to or if it's something that more adults appreciate than kids, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I can only speak for my family because our family has never really participated in like public, street festivals or anything like that. But we've been more of the traditional, you know, mass and church and in the home type of celebrations as well as the grave site. So, yeah, I mean, for me personally, like I said, as a kid, it was just something we did as part of our family. You know, we always talk about our family. We always talk about our deceased, you know, loved ones and all that. So.
Well, very good. Well, is there anything else you want to share about Day of the Dead or that we didn't get to?
Oh, well, there's tons. I mean, if one of the things that, you know, I've tried to tie in on Twitter is a lot of people in the Catholic sphere have been talking about memento mori, which is this idea of remember you will die, right?
And the remember Latin death.
For remember you remember death. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, a lot of people within that, you know, movement or whatever have thought about, you know, getting a skull and having it in their home on their desk or whatever to remember that. And so what I've been encouraging people to do is consider finding somewhere in your locality or online, Etsy or whatever, check out some of the Mexican folk art artists that are doing these calaveras, the traditional Mexican skulls, because they're beautiful and they're highly decorated, and it's a hundreds of years long, you know, tradition, and they really do need our patronage. You know, they're not the easiest of times for artisans in Mexico right now. You know, if you are interested in having a skull in your home, as many of the saints have, so I hear, then, yeah, consider that. I mean, here in South Texas, we have our grocery stores sell them in the grocery store. So while you're getting your eggs and your bread and everything, right, and your tortillas, you can get, a calavera, and you know, they've got the symbology that is also incorporated into our Christian tradition. Like the one that I purchased for our home has a peacock on the back, and the peacock is a symbol of eternal life. So cool stuff that kind of all ties together. And so I encourage you guys, if you're interested in that, to check that out.
That's a great idea.
I was going to point out the memento mori comes from the rule of Saint Benedict. A rule he wrote for, you know, monasteries and convents. In the 6th century, he said, keep death daily before one's eyes so that we're reminded of our eternal destiny. And that's, I guess, a way of doing it is to have a maybe not a real skull necessarily, but an artistic one certainly is not a bad idea. That might be something. We have a family home altar, and it might be an interesting thing to incorporate into that.
You know, and one thing I want to mention, just make sure it's clear that we're not talking about go to a cemetery and get a human skull, an actual human skull. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned sugar is sometimes what they will make it out of, correct?
Yeah, so sugar and egg whites. There's recipes online that you can find for sugar skulls if you're interested in, you know, making that with your kids or whatever and kind of talking about, you know, death and the reality of all that. So that could be something you can check out as well.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure to get that explicitly mentioned in case people are thinking you're trying to encourage people to dig up graves. It's like, no,
we're not recommending grave robbing.
No.
Most of the ones I'm talking about are like paper mache or clay sculptures. So yeah.
Cool. You could probably find some plastic ones too, I'm sure, you know, in our lovely lovely plastic culture. But
get something nice.
Yeah, get something worth it. But it is a long tradition. Of course, you know, I can't remember where it is. I think isn't it Rome that they have a chapel of bones?
The Bone Chapel. Yes. There's actually several of them around, but there's one in Rome called the Bone Chapel, which is, I want to say, Carmelite, where the monks.
That sounds right, Carmelite.
Because that sounds like a Carmelite thing. My father-in-law is a secular Carmelite, but they wanted to remain close to Christ even in death, and so their bones are incorporated into the decorations and structure of the church, which seems so weird to our 21st century sensibilities, but seems so natural to people of the Middle Ages. I mean, it's just my bones. Yeah. I'm there. It's very, yeah. Again, it's that modern fear of death. Oh, I don't want to be reminded of it.
Yeah. Well, very good. Well, that's a good place to take a pause and let Dom do his pitch. So we pass the baton over to Dom.
So, folks, as you remember from previous weeks, we're doing our giving campaign for SQPN. We need your support. We are a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to bring together pop culture and faith to sort of like what we're doing in this show, which is we're talking about culture, we're talking about things that are in the news, we're talking about things that are people will experience, and we're talking about them from a Catholic perspective. And we hope that what it does is it's inspirational for Catholics, but it's also informational for people who may not be Catholic but are interested in, you know, what we might have to say about these topics. And then we have other shows where we have our Secrets of Movies and TV shows, like we talked about our discussion of Secrets of Coco, the Pixar animated movie that talks about the Day of the Dead, but does so not from a particularly Catholic perspective. And so we brought some of our own personal perspective, especially Angela, and who brought her own family history and perspective to that, her own cultural perspective. This is what we do, and this is what we're interested in doing, and we do in so many different shows, and we love doing this and we enjoy doing it, but it takes a lot of time to do one podcast like this, as Father Corey will tell you, takes a lot of time. But to do the multiple podcasts that we do, that we want to offer you, it takes enough time that the board made the decision, the board of SQPN made a decision earlier this year that we need a full-time person managing everything, editing shows, posting shows, hosting shows. And so they brought me on full-time, but I need a salary to feed my family and pay the mortgage. And I mean, it would be nice to live in a world where these things were not necessary, but we don't. And so, but in a way, it's sort of a blessing because it means I can come to you, sort of like St. Francis did, and beg. A little holy begging is good for the soul, and it gives you the opportunity of generosity, if I could put it that way, where you have an opportunity to support our mission, to support our work. I'm sure that many of you support many good causes. We hope that you see SQPN as a good cause and a good mission. We've been doing this for over a decade, bringing good content to folks around the world. And we are hearing from so many people about how SQPN's podcasts are improving their lives, entertaining them. We've heard stories of people who've returned to the practice of the faith or become Catholic for the first time, or it just informed their own, whether it's Jewish faith or I haven't heard from anyone who's Muslim. So if you're Muslim and you're listening and you enjoy this, I'd love to hear from you how our podcasts help you. But we know that we're having an impact in the world. We want to continue to do that. And the fact is if we don't get enough support from folks, because we haven't done a giving campaign in a couple of years, our reserves are running out. We don't have giant bank accounts. We don't get support from the institutional church. We don't receive grants or from foundations. We rely entirely on the donations of listeners. And if we don't hear from folks, we can't keep doing this. We will run out of money, and I'm going to have to go get a different job that pays the bills for my family. And that's just a fact. And it's not intended to guilt you and to use, you know, like those development tactics to guilt you. It's just a fact. I want to keep doing this. I love doing this. These shows, I think, are changing lives and making people's lives better. So if you can, please go to sqpn.com/give. Click on the Become a Patron button, and you can make a monthly pledge of whatever of the, you know, choose an amount, and that will help us. You can also, there's a button to just make a one-time donation that can help. If you make the pledge, you become a pledge on Patreon, which is a great system designed for people creating things to help us to help people who enjoy the things that people create to help support them. But if you become a patron on Patreon, it actually helps us to budget and to know where that we're going to have income coming in. But it also gives us the ability to provide particular content for people who are patrons. There's a system built into it that allows us to create content just for patrons that we don't have with the previous system that we used, which was PayPal, that wasn't built into it. This gives us that ability to give you special content, but it also lets us give you special gifts at different giving levels. And so for this giving campaign, we've actually selected a number of different thank you gifts related to some of our shows. So there's Doctor Who related gifts, there's Star Trek related gifts, there's gifts related to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which is our newest podcast, which is going gangbusters. People are loving it. It's awesome. I enjoy it. It's the first podcast of mine that my wife actually listens to. So you know it must be good. Jimmy is so great at what he does, and people enjoy it. So if you haven't listened to that, I do recommend you go listen to it. But so if you can go to sqpn.com/give right away. I mean, we're not going to be doing this giving campaign forever. We need to find out that we're getting support from our listeners and our audience soon. We need to know right away so we can, you know, have the assurance that we're going to be able to continue doing this. So if you can, you know, even pause the podcast right now, go to sqpn.com/give, make a decision, on what kind of giving you can do. We really so greatly appreciate everyone who supports us. And if you can't support us, we appreciate you too. We don't charge you to listen to our podcasts. They are available for free to everyone, but we are hopeful that enough of you will see the value in what we're doing and want to continue to support us, that you will go to sqpn.com/give and give us your support today. Back to you.
Well, very good. And if you want to find out more about our giving campaign, you can go listen to episode 21 of Let's Talk a couple of weeks ago, where Dom, Jimmy, and I talked in great length about it. Yeah. So we won't belabor it anymore, you know, but please do take a look at that and listen to that. And again, go to sqpn.com/give. Now we're going to switch gears here just a little bit, just a couple of days before. Of course, we talk about the Mexican tradition of Day of the Dead. And then we're going to talk about a very American tradition, that day when the great pumpkin arises from the pumpkin patches. Oh wait, I'm sorry, I've got the Peanuts calendar sitting. I've got a Peanuts day daily calendar sitting in front of me here, and of course this week is going to be all great pumpkin stuff. You know, Linus and his great pumpkin. But we are going to talk about Halloween. You know, and it's the day that so many Americans, again, I mentioned it, so many American kids love. And it's mostly here in America, but I know it's gone international. But so many, you know, they look forward to Halloween because they do get to dress up as, you know, superheroes or princesses or whatever, you know, cartoon character or TV show figure or whatever. And they go out and get the candy and, you know, get themselves almost sick off of, you know, eating all that candy, you know. You know, so that one day a year, and of course the parents like it too, because then they can get the candy that they can snitch. Not that you know anything about that, would you, Don?
I would never do such a thing, like, as take candy from their baskets when they're in bed asleep already.
Yes, I figured as much.
The thought would never enter your mind, right?
Never think of doing that. No.
Yeah, obviously this is something I think Dom and I both grew up with. You know, again, you know, growing up in the United States, was Halloween any in your imagination at all, Angela? Is that something that, obviously you had Day of the Dead but did you also do Halloween?
I grew up here in the United States. So yes. Halloween is, I have so many memories of Halloween, and I was wondering what you guys dressed up as when you were kids, because I know there were tons of princesses in my life, but as far as like the fun costumes that I remember distinctly, I remember one year, I think I was probably 15 or something, because I trick-or-treated as far as I could go, like up until 18, maybe 19. There By the time go. I was 20, I was like, okay, no more of this. But I still dressed up even when I was in college. Sure. Mm-hmm. But I remember one costume in particular. I put on over, you know, my cold weather clothes. I put my my bathrobe. I had a coffee mug in my hand. I messed up my hair, and then I put a sign on my neck that said "Not a morning person," and I wore slippers, and that was my costume. And people literally still gave me candy. It was the greatest thing ever. So, what did you guys dress up as?
So, when we were kids, especially when I was a kid, the costumes, I don't remember a lot of kids making their own costumes like they do today, which is really great. My kids make their own all the time. So we got those store ones, and they had the plastic mask with the rubber band that digs into your head, and you can't hardly breathe because it's this little slit for your mouth, I'm trying to remember any of the ones I did. None of them really stick out except for one costume. My mom cheaped out and got like this teddy bear costume that was paper. It was this like giant paper bag that went over me. And of course it's, October in Massachusetts, it's kind of wet and damp. And the thing like disintegrated by the time we got to the third house. I was so mad.
Wow.
I was so mad. But I remember Halloween just because it's my birthday, and I always had a costume party for my birthday, which was all the kids would come dressed up. But I'm trying to remember, I didn't have any costumes that really stick out to me. I mean, I'm sure I was Luke Skywalker one year and those sorts of things. Star Wars was probably most often something I was dressed up as. My favorite memory of trick-or-treating is I would always go to the door, they would give me candy, and I would say, "It's my birthday," and they would give me more candy.
You were shameless.
yes. And that's why I look the way I do today.
I did a lot of those mask costumes, where it's the mask and the cheap plastic over. And of course, in Montana, especially, you talk about cold weather gear, you've got the parka on, you've got the coat. So you had to go like two sizes up when you bought your costume, and I do stuff like, G.I. Joe and Ghostbusters and, some of the other ones we had, again, a lot of those. By the time I got into high school, it kind of faded for me. I wasn't one that really got into it in high school. Now I joke, I'm going to dress up as a priest for Halloween. The local brewery is doing a Halloween thing here tonight, and I might go in my cassock and say I'm a priest. That's my costume, but a traditional priest. But it's something, though. Of course, Halloween is, we always look forward to the, I joke about it, but the peanut special, the great pumpkin peanut special, not as well remembered for like the Christmas one, but it's still out there. It still gets played every year.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, everybody knows that line. I got a rock. Charlie Brown got a rock when trick or treating.
Yeah, that's right.
Halloween, though, it's got some other interesting, I don't want to say traditions, but history to it. Now, Dom, thing you mentioned is, of course, you live in Massachusetts, and you've lived in Massachusetts your whole life, right?
Yeah, except for when I went to school, but yeah.
And you lived in a particular town in Massachusetts that's very well known for Halloween-type things.
So I lived in Salem, Massachusetts for about 10 years. When I moved back from college, I lived in Salem. And So Salem is known for the Salem witch trials. And so it's very famous for that. And over the years, people connected that with Halloween and witches. And Salem in October, and especially this weekend, is going to be crazy. Because people go to Salem to celebrate Halloween. There are haunted houses. There's the witch museum. There's all kinds of stuff. And I always compare it to it's like Mardi Gras light. So it's certainly not as big as Mardi Gras New Orleans, but it's street partying. People dressed up nuts. It's crazy. And for half the time I lived in Salem, I lived downtown, like in the center of town. For 5 or 6 years, I lived in the rectory of a church, my sure. parish down there in Salem, and which is right in the center of town. And it was like a sport, like on Halloween or whatever. It's either the Halloween night, but if Halloween falls on a weekend, it is double crazy. But
oh, sure.
You'd sit on the steps and you just watch the craziness go by. And early on in the night, there's lots of families and kids. But as the night went on, they went home, and then the crazy drinking adults came out. But the costumes were often so creative and amazing.
Oh, yeah. Wait. There's alcohol involved in that?
There is apparently an excuse to go. Another excuse to go drinking on Halloween.
Yes. You know, that is, and it is interesting. It is the contrast between Halloween and Day of the Dead, because Day of the Dead, it does have a religious connection. It does have
more wholesome, maybe.
A little more wholesome. Yeah, exactly. And Halloween, we've lost any sense. I think you mentioned that earlier, Dom. We've lost any sense of the religious connection, because Halloween does have a religious basis.
The name itself.
Yeah. All Hallows Eve. All
Hallows
Saints
or
Eve.
Saints. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hallow is an old English word for saint or holy. Right.
Yep. Exactly. Hallowed. You know, you'll still hear it. You know, this hallowed ground. I think was that for the Gettysburg Address. This hallowed ground.
Right.
I think that comes from. We still have that sense, but Halloween itself, which actually started out, I actually didn't realize this until recently, that it was trick-or-treating, quote-unquote, going door-to-door, was actually poor people on that day would go and they would receive, food and drink.
Right. Well, we just talked about this in StarQuest Headlines. I had a link to this, where they would go door-to-door and people would give them, I think it was in Germany, I think it was, but it was one of the European countries, where people would bake what's called soul cakes or soul bread, and they would, people would promise to pray for the deceased members of the family of that household, and they would receive bread or the cake in return. And that was one of the origins of trick-or-treating, which was fascinating.
Right.
You guys need to check out Sting's song, Soul Cake.
Oh,
so go on Spotify or YouTube, and he has a great song called Soul Cake, and it's about that tradition. So
cool,
interesting. Yeah.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just looked it up. It does come from England.
Okay, England. All right.
Yeah. So I thought it did. I wasn't sure about that, but it is an English tradition.
Right.
So that's where trick or treating started. Again, what we call trick or treating now, what we know as trick or treating really is a modern thing. I think that was 19th century, 20th century here in the United States, but they had brought this tradition of the soul cakes with them.
Yeah.
So it really kind of started from that.
And then we turned it into, if you don't give me candy, I'm going to do something nasty to you.
Exactly. Well, and that's the funny part. Yeah. The funny part is it started out where it was the kids asking for either a trick or a treat.
Right.
And then it went to, now it's the other way around, is give me a treat or I'm going to give you a trick.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite parts of Halloween is the kids coming to the door. I love to hand out candy and see the kids, and especially the little ones, how excited they are, how much fun they're having going around. And in these days where it's in many neighbors like mine, I don't get to meet my neighbors all that often. To meet the neighbors and say hi, to have a pleasant interaction, which isn't about you parking your car in the wrong place or something, like that. This is a fun event, and that's one of the things I love about Halloween.
Yeah, that's true. That is one of the more wholesome elements of Halloween is the communal part of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have this here, but or where you are, but here in Texas, a lot of the parishes have, parties for the kids, adults. And, some of them, are encouraged to dress only as saints. Other ones you can come as whatever, as long as it's not scary, gory or whatever. But, that's one of the cool things about the festival concept. I think a lot of these days when you think of a festival, You know, sometimes it can be tame, but other times it's like, you know, more Woodstock, like Coachella type yeah, of stuff going on. Yeah. So, yeah. Well,
one thing that's it's interesting, of course, with concern about safety yep. is that more and more places, and I've heard parishes do this, I've seen schools do this, Catholic schools, Catholic parishes, the trunk or treat,
yep.
where they'll go out to the parking lot or you know some other enclosed area, and people will pull in their vehicles and they'll do trick or treating from car to car, and. Admittedly, that I want to say, boy, that takes all the fun out of it, but I can understand the safety concern too. Half the fun as a kid was going from door to door, and of course, well, half the fun for adults, like you said, is to see the kids come to your house.
I think it started as a safety thing, but I think people keep going back to I still want to go door to door, and me, and in fact, I think I was just telling to my wife Melanie that. Now people do trunk or treat and door to door. Like there's yeah. all these trunk or treat yeah. things. Like what is this? Like 30 days of candy for these kids. They don't need that much sugar. I'm not yes. gonna. So actually, the Cub Scout pack that my kids are in, are tomorrow is they're doing a trunk or treat for their pack meeting. But we're still gonna go around. You know, one of the things when I lived in Salem, which was really cool, was because I also lived there after Melly and I got married. We had a house, and so kids would come from other states to trick or treat in Salem. It was kind of fun. So seeing kids come to the door and ask them, "Where are you from?" "I'm from Pennsylvania." "You drove from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts yeah. to trick or treat." It's so much fun. It's so great.
Yeah, it's.
So what can I ask? What favorite candy that you wanted to get in your trick or treat bag when you were a kid?
Oh, this is going to be controversial. I'm one of those people who likes candy corn. In fact, yeah. I like it too much. It's like an addictive substance. I've got to not eat it at all. Like, don't bring it in the house. I will eat yeah. all of it.
Wow.
I don't know what it is. I get sick of it. I eat it too much.
Yeah. See, I'm with you. I love candy corn. It wasn't my favorite thing to get, of course. Of course, everybody yeah. loves it when you find that house that had like real candy bars.
Full-size candy bars.
That's still the joke
mini,
of
like, yeah.
It's like fun the Holy
size.
Grail.
Yeah. The fun size candy bars. Only a marketing executive would come up with the idea that we'll give them less candy and we'll call it fun.
Exactly. Well, it's fun because then you can have more.
Yeah,
that's
a small
true.
One. I need to have two or three. I like that cartoon online where it's, you know, the kids are trick or treating and you see the Grim Reaper there. "Margaret, I've come for your..." "Wait, full size candy bars? Never mind, we're good."
Right, that was a good one.
You know, of course, Halloween, it does. I think most people, when they think of Halloween, you know, you talk about wholesome. It really is more of a wholesome event.
It should be.
It's fun. Yeah. It's kids. It's getting together. It's parties. It's just enjoying, you know. And it doesn't have the connection to the death like Day of the Dead does. But it's a fun thing. But there are less than savory connection with it as well. Right. You know, of course, this is when all the horror movies come out. This is when all right. the,
yeah.
But there's also the occult that gets done a lot. And I know Salem is kind of a connection for that as well.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you an interesting story about that. So Salem has a lot of Wiccan, people who practice witchcraft. Mm-hmm. There are witchcraft stores. People like to go in there and have fun. They think it's just the innocent fun to go in. But we have, in my old parish, we had a former witch. She was a witch, and then she repented and came back to the Pax of her Catholic faith. And she warns people, look, this stuff isn't to be played with. There's real things going on here.
Yeah.
I have heard from a priest once was telling me that he was walking around Salem and he was kind of curious and walked in. He was in just regular street clothes, didn't have his collar on, walked into one of these witch stores. And the person wasn't behind the counter. And then suddenly this woman comes barreling out from the back and looks at him and says, "What do you want, priest?" He didn't live in town. He was from another town. Like there was no way that she knew who he was beforehand. Like there's, you know, don't mess with stuff, folks. Don't mess with the occult. It really is not worth it. So a couple of things my parish did that was downtown was we would have an annual concert. Because there's so many, you know, 100,000 people wandering around our town, We would have a Catholic concert. We had Father Stan Fortuna there one year to kind of do his music and rap and talk to people, which was fun. You know, you'd get people who would make remarks, whatever. And then another year we did in the church, we had praise and worship and at all night adoration into All Saints Day. Cool. And let me tell you, there's nothing like being in a church at 3 o'clock in the morning in Salem on Halloween, hearing unearthly screams outside while you're with Jesus, praying before Jesus, like I'm with you, Jesus. I'm staying close to you. but I guess that's one
adoration session you don't really fall quite asleep for.
No, so I'd wake all night there. It was one of the most amazing Halloweens I ever had because I organized it. I committed to staying all night there and just to be there all night and then to get up in the morning and, you know, or people, you know, to come in the morning, and then 8 o'clock mass. Cause it was a Saturday into a Sunday. So we had 8 o'clock Sunday mass and I'm sitting there looking like I'd been up all night. But it was such an amazing experience to do that. And it's not like I'm not going to say I was judging people for celebrating Halloween, which I think some people thought we might be doing, but just to kind of there are things that happen on Halloween that are not wholesome and that we need to that I think the presence of Christ in the midst of all that was necessary, good.
That kind of speaks to the whole history of Halloween, at least the popular understanding of the history of Halloween. Mm-hmm. Because you know you'll hear it was Samhain, I think, is the name of the feast. It was
Samhain, they pronounce it, but it looks like Samhain. Yeah, but Samhain. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's this ancient pagan festival, and of course, I was just reading recently. I don't know how true it is that by the time Christianity actually got to the British Isles, it was already faded. No one really marked it. No one really remembered it. So there really wasn't that direct connection. It just happened to be about the same time. But, you know, Wicca has really tried to rejuvenate that, to bring it back. Because Wicca as it celebrates today, and I know there are going to be people who are Wiccan who are going to disagree with me on this, but I'm sorry, this is the facts of it.
Historical fact.
Yeah. Is not historical pagan practices. Now, it is dabbling in the occult. It is dabbling in very, very dangerous things, and the people who practice it are putting their souls at risk. And I will state that unequivocally. But they want to take Halloween, which does have a Christian background, and subvert it to
Change
their
it.
Purposes.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the devil loves that. He's going to use that. And that's why there is so much occult practice on Halloween.
You know, if there's a patron saint, he's not actually a saint yet, but if there were to be a patron saint for this sort of stuff, it would be Blessed Bartolo Longo, who was a satanic priest who converted and became holy and is blessed. He's been beatified, but certainly he would have said some of the same things about it. Yeah, you know, Halloween is just one of those days where there seems like momentous things have happened throughout history.
Right.
It's the day that Harry Houdini died, which is kind of, you know, Houdini who was the magician and the escape artist is the word.
Yep.
But great disasters happened on Halloween and people like to see if there's important significance to the fact. The first attack of World War II on the United States was not Pearl Harbor, but it was actually the sinking of the Reuben James, which was by a German U-boat on Halloween in 1941. It was a destroyer protecting supply shipments. We were sending supplies to Great Britain, and it was sank during the... during one of those voyages on October 31st, 1941. But there's these interesting, there's an article on mentalfloss.com where that has a list of 10 historic things that happened on Halloween. The 11th would be my birth, of course, but that wasn't included. But the other 10 important things that happened on Halloween. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes too, because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, of course, as I hinted to earlier, you know, it is as the Lutherans call it, Reformation Day, as I prefer, call it the Day of Revolt. Because it is the day that Martin Luther in 1517, I think it was, that he, 1517, because it was just last year they celebrated the 500th or 600th anniversary of it. So, and, you know, a sad day in Christianity when Western Christianity split that deeply, that split that still exists to this day, that we can pray one day will be overturned, that we will be reunited, that they will come back to Mother Church. You know, is our hope. So,
so he nailed the 95 theses to the Wittenberg door was on that Halloween.
It wasn't the actual formal separation, but it's the day they mark as
sort of
it.
The beginning. It was
the beginning of the split.
Did he do that on purpose? Like, do you know if there was some kind of a connect? He wanted to make a connection between holiness and like what he was doing.
I'm going to guess. Yeah, I think it was because of the indulgences that he was protesting, the practice and the connection to saints and the, you know, the prayers of All Saints Day and All Souls Day. I think that was probably why he chose that day to do it.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
I've not read any of his writings, so I can't speak with any kind of, you know, educated understanding, but I mean that makes sense to me. It really does. That it was purposely chosen as the day before All Saints because, of course, there was the issue of the indulgences. So that does make a lot of sense,
right?
It was
on the door of on the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg.
Right.
So that makes sense.
There you go.
So people coming to the patronal feast for that church on that day would see this, you know, nailed to the door. So I'm going to guess that's why.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, we've got a little long in this one, but it's some good stuff. So we should probably get going to our pick of the week since we went over our hour that I try to keep it under, but that's all right. my fault. I'm the moderator. No. So Angela, what do you have for a pick of the week this week?
Well, I've doled out a lot of really great suggestions over this whole podcast, but this morning I found out that there is now an app that is Catholic Pokemon Go, and it's called Follow JC Go. So it's on Android and iPhone. And you can go check it out. It's basically collecting the saints. So it's the same geolocation type of, technology. And you can walk around, collect the saints. And then if you're near a church or a hospital, apparently it reminds you to pray. Fun stuff like that.
Got to collect them all.
Got to collect them all. It's called Follow JC Go.
And I think it's right now it's only available in Spanish, but it will soon be available in English and Portuguese in the next few weeks, I think.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm kind of interested to check it out. It'll be interesting to see what happens with it.
Yeah.
How about you, Dom? What do you have for a pick?
So I want to recommend, it's Halloween, so I'm going to recommend a TV show about the Daredevil. The Netflix series Daredevil Season 3 is up, and it's much better than Season 2. I felt like Season 2 was a bit of a lull, but it's very interesting. I've only watched half the season so far, but the first half is so much about a struggle of faith. Like, he's literally struggling with God, with why does God do, why is God let suffering? Why am I here? What is my vocation? The character has these long talks with this nun who's helping him recover. Mm. This is a faith-filled show, but not in the way that you usually hear it. Not like as in like people on their knees praying the whole time, but it's a show filled with questions about and struggling with faith. So check out Daredevil Season 3. It's really good.
Well, very good.
Yes, and not for the squeamish, the way, because my husband is addicted to this show, but every time I pass by and then I see like one of the gory fight scenes or whatever, I'm just like, oh, gross. Yeah.
Yes, it is violent. So
I'm gonna have to catch up because I watched the first season and loved it. I thought it was very enjoyable. But a lot of fake blood is spilled.
Well, he's a lot like Jack Bauer from 24, where he gets beaten to a pulp, but gets up and keeps going. It's like, how? Yeah. What? No? Okay. Yeah,
this is obviously comic book, because in real life, he'd be laying there in a pile just going, I quit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, very good. My pick of the week is something I've tech toy that I've been using as part of my workouts. Of course, you know, as I mentioned here before, I've been doing jogging. I'm up to three and a half miles 3 days a week. I was awesome. Going to go this morning before we recorded, but the wind was howling at 20 miles an hour. It's like, yeah, that's not going to be fun. So I'll have to do that later. But I picked up some of the Google Buds, the Pixel Buds. You know, those who are in the Apple world know the Apple Buds,
the AirPods.
AirPods. This is Google's version of it. And one thing I like about it, I know it's been a critique by some people, but I think it's actually a benefit, is the two buds are actually connected by a wire. They're wireless, but they're connected by a wire. And I consider that a benefit, because I've known people who have had the Apple version and lost one. And you can't just replace one. You got to go get a whole new set.
You can actually replace one AirPod.
They fixed that, because when they first came out, you couldn't.
I'm not sure, but it's $69. If you lose one, it's $69.
Okay. This one, you either lose them both or you have them. And it does the same thing that Apple's Buds do, where you can. It's got a little box you can put them in to charge them up and everything, and that's really nice. Yeah, they're great, because then you got the touch control and everything on them, they work best. I think they work with anything, but they work especially with the Pixel line. I've got the first generation Pixel that I've used for 2 years and absolutely loved, and they work great with it. And it's just so nice when I go running. I don't have to worry about a cord hanging down. Yes, my phone still has a headphone jack. The new ones, new Pixels don't, but mine still does. They're really nice, and they fit well. I think they fit well in my ear. You know, you can adjust the cord so it kind of hooks in there well. So as I'm running, I don't have to worry about them slipping out or anything like that. If I, you know, can tap them to stop the play and all that. So that's my pick, is the Google Pixel Buds. There's rumors new ones coming out. I haven't seen anything that they're actually releasing the second version yet. But there's been rumors new ones coming out. But the first gen I really like. So go check that out.
Cool.
Well, thank you both for coming on. Dom, we're finally done with you for a while on Let's Talk. Of course, where else can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Pretty much on every other show on the network. Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, StarQuest Headlines, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. If you want to find me on social media or see other things, non-SQPN things I'm doing, you can go to my website at betnet.com, BETTNET.com.
Well, excellent. And anything you want to promote, Angela?
Well, I jumped back on Twitter. So if you want to tweet at me, just tweet at Inspired Angela. And hopefully excellent. I'll see that and reach out.
Well,
thanks for listening.
Yeah, excellent. And Father Corey Stika, again, you can find me at my website, frcorey.org, where I post my homilies mostly. It's pretty much all I post there, but that you can hear my homilies. I record those and post them there. I am on Twitter a bit more, Fr Corey Stika, last name spelled STICHA. Facebook is Father Corey Stika. You can find me there. And again, you can find me on Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, once in a while I'll show up on other podcasts, and of course here on Let's Talk. If you wish to send us feedback, we would love to get that. We want to hear from you. It is a community show, so we want to hear your feedback. You can email us at letstalk@sqpn.com, and we will be glad to read that on the air, and maybe you'll even have an idea someone or something to talk about, someone to have on the show or something to talk about. So please do send us feedback. And once again, support our giving campaign at sqpn.com/give. Thank you once again for listening, and God bless.
This is Dom Bettinelli again. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast and that you'll help us keep producing the podcast you love. Thank you for your generosity. To make your pledge and find out about the free thank you gifts we'd like to send you, visit sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give.